Welcome to MGO Podcast 10.0A. We just...
Ayo! Sorry, that sounded like it needed a response.
Welcome to MGO Podcast 10.
Good Lord.
I mean, you haven't been here for the whole thing because I did it with Tim for a couple years.
But then, I think I've been here since like 3?
Yeah, I think so.
Anyway,
we're old and dying, but
I'm a man. I'm 30.
Hello and welcome back to another season of Michigan Podcasting Content. I am Ryan Cook. We would like to thank our sponsors. First off, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Homeshore Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, Peak Wealth Management, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad. Oh. I'm a man. I'm 39.
So close.
Yeah.
The Gandhi.
Yeah, well, next year I can lead off the podcast with this. Anyway, Seth's here because we're talking a bunch of stuff about football, and Seth knows football. Say hi, Seth.
Hi, Seth.
This is a tradition,
okay, the phone
too.
Of the pen didn't go at Seth. That was good.
We've been at this 10 years, and one of the traditions...
I have a 2.5-year-old. I don't need another one. All right, so we got a bunch of stuff to talk about, but we're going to stuff all the like weird, terrible Big Ten stuff at the end. So if you just want to hear that bit, skip to the third podcast in our triad. This is podcast number one, in which we talk about the offense.
Which is so much better to talk about than the Big Ten East, right?
surprisingly, yes. That's good perspective.
Now
there is something I would rather talk about less than Michigan's offense, especially last year's Michigan offense.
Yes.
But we will start at the top at quarterback, where Shea Patterson has transferred in from Ole Miss and promises to deliver quarterbacking competency, much like a throwing Casey Lupata.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah. That's
a strong reference there, by
Thank
the way.
You.
Kicking consistency, Lapata.
Competency. Kicking
Dang
competency.
It
was both. It was never decided.
He's flubby references. I don't have to call you
hey,
that too.
That's my reference. I can make it whatever I want. You don't see people telling George Lucas what to do with Star Wars. Damn. Anyway, Patterson is a really interesting guy because I went over his film last year and it was largely inconclusive. So the Alabama game, which I UFR'd, I invented an acronym for virtually unblocked guy up the gut because it happened so often I was sick of typing it out. And of course they lose Hugh Freeze, who's not only the head coach, but he's the offensive coordinator.
Among other things.
Yes. I mean, we can't really talk about that anymore and be like, oh, Hugh Freeze is like his jamoke.
We have totally lost the moral high ground,
right.
But
oh,
I still can get cracks at about Hugh Freeze. That will not be funny.
How many conference rooms are we at this point? It's a new year, so we've started over.
No, you only reset if you replace your coach.
No. No, every year
we're
back at 13. We're full refresh, but
okay.
Ohio State has already lost its conference room.
Yes.
Maryland has already lost its conference
yes.
room. Has anybody else like risen to that kind of despicableness? I mean,
Michigan State is an institution, I think.
Like, Michigan State is like locked in the basement right
now. I feel like that was like last year, and if we're doing a hard reset at this point,
okay.
They still have their conference room.
It's they slipped Engler in like right before the bell.
Right. So I think that at this juncture, they're still here at the residency.
Congratulations, Michigan State.
Congratulations
on passing the lowest bar on a technicality.
So there are 11 conference rooms at this juncture.
They're familiar with that.
I was talking about Shea Patterson.
You were.
Oh, God.
I think it'll be pretty good.
Mid-season form here on the
podcast. Yeah, we really are.
So anyway, I was watching the Alabama game, and after they lose their coordinator, they're kind of coached by a guy who looks like he was fetched from the local Sonic. He's the manager at the Sonic. Let's put some respect on that. But he's definitely working at a Sonic. And he becomes their head coach, and their offense is basically being run by Hugh Freeze's second command. And their offense turns into this series of plays where there's a screen on one side, and then if he wants, Patterson can take like a backside fade against one-on-one coverage. This works pretty well against like South Alabama and Jacksonville State, which I don't even think has a program, because he's got some really good receivers. And then at Alabama, they're running this stuff, and the guy back out there, his name is DJ Metcalf, and he's a true freshman. I don't know why you're not putting A.J. Brown out there, because he's probably going to be a first-round pick in next year's draft. But you have these throws that Patterson has where he's locked into one route, and he can hit that route or he could not hit that route. And if you get shoved into the sideline like Metcalf did in this game, there's nothing to hit. So you just throw the ball away, basically. And that was his whole season against like Alabama and LSU. Not so much Auburn this time around, but you know it was... There were a lot of incomplete passes that were kind of just baked into the offense by design. And when he wasn't on an offense that was overmatched everywhere except wide receiver, he performed, I don't want to say great, but I would say very well. So the Cal game, you know, they lose that. He throws a couple interceptions, and the interceptions are the really benign variety where it's a slant and he throws it like at the back shoulder of his wide receiver. Yeah, it needs to be like a foot out in front, but it's not something that turns into a wide interception unless it's just like one of those Keystone Cops plays. And that's what happens. But the thing that kind of leapt out in that game is that when he gets a guy who pops open deep, he just hits him. Like there's, you know, Donovan Peoples-Jones last year?
That just sounds so good.
It's like it's not even a thing where it's like, oh, I wonder if he's going to hit him. I have the expectation that if there's a fade there and the guy has two steps, let alone a post, that he's just going to get hit in the chest and be able to keep running. And it was enlightening.
It's there's a huge difference. Like when you see, like, to me, that makes me think of that play that Alabama drew up where Lane Kiffin put his hand up in the air like before the quarterback threw the ball.
Yeah.
It'd like, nice. That's how I want to feel about my quarterback.
Yeah,
And Shea Patterson, it seems like if somebody's going to break open, and it seems like those receivers will be able to break open.
It seems like that's a normal thing for a lot of schools, too. It's just Michigan's gone so long now without a quarterback who's hitting those.
Yeah, and if he throws an inaccurate fade, it's usually because he's getting, you know, a moderate amount of pressure. He can't really step into the throw or
which
a lot
is
of pressure.
Relevant
it is relevant, but his accuracy on deep passes I thought was excellent, and it didn't show up necessarily in the numbers that like Pro Football Focus has, but I don't think that's because of Patterson. I think it's because of the nature of the offense, and I have good news about Patterson as he affects the rest of the offense, is that in watching these Ole Miss games, I became convinced that their offensive line was no better than Michigan's at pass protection.
Great.
But because Patterson is mobile, because he operates well from the gun, and you can get the ball out of his hands more quickly than you can with a guy like Spate, who's kind of an under-center guy who wants to take a drop, they finished like kind of dead average in sack rate. Say they were, I think, 58th or something.
And my kingdom for dead average.
Right. Now. And if Michigan can get their sack rate to like 60th, this is a playoff contender.
Yeah, there are teams that have made the playoff recently that have been dead average at pass protection.
You can
get by with a creative offense around that issue, especially with a mobile quarterback and especially with an offense capable of explosive plays. And I would say this team has a lot of players that are explosive.
There's a thing too that last year I think Michigan's quarterbacks on the back end of the schedule were not helping their offensive lines very much either. Like O'Korn took a
sure,
yeah,
more than a few sacks.
Shea Patterson takes a much more direct route to like the sideline and not his own end zone.
Right, right.
Yeah, but he is that. I keep comparing to Tate Forsyth, and people are mad at me about that. But that's exactly his playing style, and he's got more pop in his arm, and he's very accurate downfield. He can make progressions too, like. Not all of those plays are kind of like the split and half plays. That's what they do when they know they can't pass protect at all.
And Tate Forsyth, it was good.
And Tate Forsyth, you know, I would have been really interested to see what Tate Forsyth could have become like over
yeah,
the long.
There were reasons yeah. he didn't become what he could have become. But
I mean,
one Tate of them was Denard Robinson.
Well, you know, I think Drew Tate is another interesting comparable for Iowa. Like, he was that kind of, you know, I'm smallish, I'm able to move around.
And he had a cannon.
Yeah.
Like, Hail Mary is his most famous play.
Very much a gunslinger and the kind of guy who can buy your offensive line some time. So I think both those guys are pretty tight comparisons. And if Patterson just improves a little bit over last year, like as you would expect a true sophomore becoming a true junior to do, like, you know, I think he's at least a B+ quarterback, and that's, I mean, after last year, that's manna from heaven.
Yeah, and there's a chance he's better than that. If the offense comes together and he's given the protection.
I mean, there's a reason that a lot of the like mock drafts have him very high up.
Yes,
I think too high up. Like someone had him the top pick in the draft. I'm like, that's not happening. Just for NFL reasons, right?
And that's like, it's not like he is the stereotypical NFL quarterback. He is short for that. So he's not a guy that you'd necessarily, even with the 5-star credential coming into college, he's not a guy you'd necessarily expect to be that high on NFL draft boards unless they really see something in his arm.
Yeah. So I think, you know, you're going to see at least a solid season from Patterson, and given the fact that Michigan is coming off probably the worst quarterbacking since 2008.
2008. Yeah. Let's go with 2008.
I think that will be a major step forward, but there's also, you know, the uncertainty of this is a transfer who's in a new offense and that stuff. That's kind of your main concern.
Yes.
His backups were explicitly stated by Harbaugh. Number two is Brandon Peters, still on campus. And number three is Dylan McCaffrey. And we saw Peters last year. He was obviously significantly better than O'Korn, but the regression of the bowl game was pretty disappointing.
Yeah, I just rewatched the bowl game two nights ago to, like,
why?
To flay myself into football.
What was your impression of Brandon Peters from that game?
I think something happened in Wisconsin that kind of made him skittish. There was a very different quarterback.
Like, that was a turning point for him.
I mean, that's like a month after his injury at Wisconsin.
But he's a freshman getting thrown into an awful situation behind a line that made a much older quarterback turn and head for the hills every snap.
Right, and he wasn't back until like a week before the bowl game, so he was not.
Was that true?
Yeah, he wasn't practicing for a while.
I had forgotten that. Okay, that does make it a lot more sense.
So, yeah, I mean, he was the only option because he was the only option. But that he shouldn't have been out there, and I don't think that necessarily means that he is far off development.
I think it probably set his development back, if anything.
Most likely. But, it, you know...
The Devin Gardner.
Yes.
Path.
I mean, we've witnessed it.
Yeah.
It's tough to unsee that.
So, I do think there's a couple interesting things here. Is that, one, Peters is distinctively number two. And there were, again, this kind of like bevy of rumors in the offseason that Peters was a malcontent and he was going to transfer.
Certain places.
We've already called them out. I've already been blocked. It's fine. But to see him as the clear number two.
Just had a cough, man.
To see him as the clear number two in a situation where I think we all think Patterson is trying to be a one and done, I think is good news for him in the long term. Yes. And
it keeps him bought into this year.
Yeah. Second thing is that Joe Milton is not on this list.
In terms of game readiness, that shouldn't surprise us.
I know, but we've been hearing all this stuff about like how he's the next coming.
Folk stories.
Yeah. Sam laid it out pretty strongly,
and
I think.
I believe those things.
Like throwing it over their mountains.
And I think that we need to pump our brakes a little bit with the Joe Milton stuff, and just he's a developmental quarterback who we hope will develop. And if Shea is a one and done, I don't think I'd make him the favorite for the job next year, despite all the talk we've had.
No, I would not at all. I think he's a guy who's still probably going to take 3 years. If you go back and look at that high school tape, it's tough to see somebody getting that much better that quickly in a way where you want to put him on a field in a talented offense where you just don't need him to turn the ball over.
The one thing that I would say, I mean, I agree with you mostly on that. The only thing that like gives me a little bit of pause with that is Pahokee. Now, he went to high school.
I love how bought in he is, and he clearly is. Like, that the coaches talk about him the way they do. Him,
yeah.
Like, says very good things about his future. I still think that probably it's going to take a couple years, and we're at least going to have like a gap year.
You're right. But I kind of feel like if someone was going to do it, it's going to be the 6'5" version of Martavius Odoms, Vinton Smith.
Yeah. I'm ready to believe in the dude who walked onto campus like the dude who should be first off the bus.
Right. Yeah. So, Just let us do for a bit.
You know. I mean, a redshirt year is good. We can.
I mean, there's no question he's going to redshirt. It's just like we're talking about. Like,
we might get to see him throw the ball really, really far against some bad teams in garbage time, and that'll be fun.
Yeah, that's going to be weird.
I like that rule.
Yes. I love that.
It's such a weird rule. Like, we're going to have to track it. Like, how many games have all the non-redshirt people played it?
Yeah, we probably need like a redshirt tracker wiki. We probably need to get that going.
I think that already happened just by you just spoke it.
I did speak it into it. Yeah. My apologies for giving work when I'm not doing any.
No, it's well. So we'll set it up for the first. We'll set the original up, and then the users will just take care of it because there's always like dudes who want to do that. We're actually gonna put in a break right now.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're gonna win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present The Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com. If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco, to St. Louis, to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Running back, Michigan returns our top two backs from last year, Chris Evans and Caron Higdon. Higdon was 6 yards short of 1,000 yards, and
that apparently kept him at Michigan.
I don't know if that was a joke or if he was serious. I feel like it must have been a joke, but it felt kind of serious.
He said it pretty seriously.
And I feel like he definitely would have been drafted, like, probably in the middle rounds. You know, he really took his promise and delivered on it as the season went along. So early in the season, he was missing cuts and missing some pretty huge cuts. And later in the season, you know, they kind of bring in that counter package.
And then by that, like, Indiana game, he's just exploding through holes. And like, not just explode, like, he's hitting the right holes consistently. Yeah. And then you get to see his athleticism and his open field wiggle on display.
So he's got the vision now, probably. We're still a little bit, jury's a little bit out on that. But we saw him in the open field enough, and people aren't catching him. Like, he's got deep speed. He runs behind his pads, and I always say this, that he really kind of brings that to life as, like, now I understand what that means.
And now he's rocked up.
And he was, like, the first of the off-season S&C porn to come out.
He was Herbert's, like, project. Like, he brought him out first.
So there's a difference between the, like, before and after things that they're putting out now, where it's like, I gained the 15 pounds that most people do over a year. And then they just kind of posted, like, a shot of the weight room on Instagram, I believe Michigan did. And people started being like, is that Caron Higdon? What did... Or is that, like, The Rock, except a little shorter and blacker?
Funhouse mirror, like.
and I mean, he's really up 15 pounds. And given how much power he had last year, where he's running over Wisconsin safeties for 4 or 5 yards after contact, like, I think this could be one of the best running backs in the country.
It still boggles the mind that he weighs less than Chris Evans.
It really does. Even still.
Does he?
Yeah. Even on the updated roster. Weighs less.
Maybe Evans is getting a courtesy bump there.
And maybe Evans is made of the same thing as Mike Onwenu, and he's just a much smaller human being.
Possibly. But, like, yeah. I feel like, you know, people are kind of sleeping on him because Michigan had a terrible offense. But given what was happening around him, for him to have the yards per carry he did, when every safety in the country can line up at 8 yards and start running downhill with no threat of getting it in your face. It's just, I think, a competent passing game, Higdon's extra weight, a more cohesive run unit. Like, I think he could really blow up. And the main thing that's going to prevent that from happening is Chris Evans.
Yeah, I mean, I'd
say that's not even necessarily true, except that because you could use both of those guys on the field at the same time, except that Michigan has so many other weapons that they're going to want to have on the field.
Yeah, especially because a lot of them are like tight ends and fullbacks and
guys that make more receivers. Sense to put in the slot, and that's where you'd probably use Evans as a threat. Right. I still expect to maybe see him a couple times on some jet action or whatever.
One of the things they're doing against Ohio State is basically gave him Eddie McDoom's job. And just start him in the backfield.
Eddie McDoom is gone now.
Yeah. And
that's a good point.
I mean, you could still do that and have Higdon on the field. Those are two of your best players. You might
as well use
the question is whether you'd just rather give those carries to Donovan Peoples-Jones.
I would rather give them to Evans.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Evans...
Like, I'm not so sure.
Well,
I've seen a lot of Donovan Peoples-Jones.
I don't know. I just saw him return punts, and he like, okay, return.
This doesn't involve him having to judge it and catch a ball out of midair.
No, I'm just talking about like...
He has good vision, and I mean, he's got a Preston thing going. It's
that is bold.
I think you're going to realize... I don't think that's bold to anybody who watched football in Detroit when he was in high school.
Okay. I didn't really like him as a punt returner, even setting aside the fact that he had some trouble fielding them. Like, I just thought
he also had a touchdown.
I know, but
some other very close calls. And we also were spoiled by Jabril Peppers.
That is absolutely true. I just feel like we're getting off topic here.
We are, because we're talking about him as a return man. I would like to see him in the slot, because if you get him... If you block it well and you get him to the second level, he might just never get touched.
That's true. But anyway, we were talking about Chris Evans.
That is what we were doing. I'm sorry.
One thing that did happen late in the year is that Michigan finally started trying to use him as that, you know, dual threat.
Yes.
So he had, I think, 90 catches his final 2 years in high school, and that was almost completely absent from the offense until Brandon Peters ascended to the starting job. And then,
and Michigan had been hit in the face by wheel routes enough.
Right,
it was a good idea. And maybe he hits a,
like, they get him on a wheel route, and I'm like,
which is Brandon Peters' first touchdown too. And the whole stadium just like, yes,
and like that seems like a good idea. Let's
that,
continue.
That was like that. An I saw God moment for so many reasons.
And then
against freaking Rutgers,
and Lord. Then in the Ohio State game, you know, he's able to like get the corner on these five-star athletes. Like, they put him out in space, and he's able to, like, turn a third and 13 into a first down by, like, getting the last 6-7 yards on his own. He could have had an absolutely huge game if anyone could throw him the ball from 5 feet away. And, like, with Shea Patterson as the quarterback now, you're going to see a lot more gun. I think you're going to see Chris Evans in the backfield a lot, and, you know, he's not going to be a great pass protector. But you don't have to have him as a great pass protector because he is a major threat coming out of the backfield.
And also, Patterson occupies a defender that nobody who played quarterback for Michigan last year was occupying. Because John O'Korn was not good enough at passing to be the dual threat
that's true.
Guy he, that actually occupies a defender.
Yeah, there was like a moment here or there, but like no consistent threat. And Patterson has that kind of white guy mobility that like a South Carolina quarterback has, and you're like, that guy ran for 500 yards. Like, it could happen. Like, in Michigan, you know, historically, Harbaugh quarterbacks.
Oh, that did make me think of Matt Jones from Arkansas.
Exactly.
From Arkansas. Well,
I know, but it's the same. It's the same concept. And I just feel like, you know, historically, Harbaugh quarterbacks have been run threats, and Patterson will probably pick up a few hundred yards on the ground, and that opened things up even more for the two running backs. So it's for, I don't think it's efficiency for these guys. I think it's just how many carries can you actually get? Because I think this is going
to
be really
I think that's the question that applies to everybody on this offense. It's just like, how many touches can you get?
And you got to stay on the field to do that. So
yeah.
Behind Evans and Higdon is not much at the moment.
Yeah, a bit of a pile.
True Wilson, a walk-on, was the number three back coming out of spring pretty explicitly. Not like, oh, he's in this group. It's like, True Wilson is number three.
He can block. That's why he's three.
Hey, if he can block, he can play.
Yeah.
Yes. Especially as a third back.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, he's listed at the same size the other two backs are. Like, he's listed at 5'10", 202, which is exactly
he's somebody who, was when he came here, I was surprised that he didn't end up on defense. I actually ended up seeing him play a fair amount in high school because he was at...
Oh, that's in the season preview.
Yeah.
like a True Wilson, like, whenever he's mentioned on your blog, it's like, Ace scouted him. We're serious.
We really do sometimes go to things. We leave the house.
But he had Service Academy offers.
Yes.
He had all three. And that's kind of like, I think, what you can expect. And like, you know,
and I think he would have had like solid MAC offers and stuff like that if he had, like, he was either going to go to a service academy or he was going to go to Michigan.
Right. So, you know, this is a guy who has the requisite size. Like, you know, if he's going to be a third down pass protector in the Vincent Smith mold, Vincent Smith was 5'6" and 170 some pounds. He can do it. And he might not be the most explosive guy running the ball, but I think there was a recent study at the Ringer.
Mm-hmm. That was the most. Yeah, it was the NFL, which had a lot more passing. But yeah, the most underrated or most important running back.
The one most correlated to winning was ability to pass protect.
Right, that's what it was. Yeah,
so
that's pretty big.
if he's in the mix because he's Michigan's best pass protector, he will see snaps.
And that's especially since, like, I mean, Christian Turner is a very talented back, but does he bring something that Caron Higdon doesn't?
Right.
And Caron Higdon was not a very good pass protector. We should also probably note
well,
that.
Well, nobody was a good pass protector last year, but
because nobody knew where anybody was coming from. Yeah.
Right. So, like, I went over it, you know, and like Higdon did pick up, you know, kind of scattered minuses, but I don't think he was outright. Like,
he's certainly built to pick up blitzes.
Yeah. Nobody was like Toussaint, where they were just getting ragdolled into the quarterback.
Like, that happened every once in a while, but I felt like Michigan's running backs, when
and
they
now knew, he's racked up.
Yeah, when they knew who they were supposed to block, they did it fairly well. And I think Higdon will be able to do it, but like, if it's a passing down and you just want that pass protection, do you want Higdon taking that hit? No, probably not. So maybe
might as well save that snap.
Yeah.
Might as well just put them in, you know, put them in the pass pattern.
Ace mentioned him already, but Christian Turner appears to be the guy from the chasing pack who's closest to the field.
Is he hurt? That was the...
I don't...
Someone came to me yesterday in the Alumni Association event and said he was...
I don't...
There was a thread on the board that maybe he was dinged up, I think. I mean, didn't read it, though, so I'm not sure.
everybody is some variety of hurt. I don't think anything long-term is happening there. But with, you know, Michael Barrett apparently playing defense at this point and Amori Samuels...
We just haven't heard much, I don't think,
a little...
Right?
Worrisome that we haven't heard anything about Amari Samuels. I know he was dinged up in spring, but I really loved his film. And
on one hand, the optimistic take is that like it probably is still a pretty serious transition from New Mexico competition. On the other hand, he's a running back.
Yeah,
and like Mike Hart, like you know. His competition was among the worst we could possibly imagine.
That's actually an interesting thing you mentioned.
They burned his redshirt last year?
They burned his redshirt last year.
Yeah.
But this could be a year where he gets it back. Like, because you can play him four games now and still get a redshirt on him. So, like...
I just question whether they would want to do that instead of recruiting another running back and having him matriculate through the program.
No, don't. I mean, the thing is... A redshirt is a.
I don't say that as a bad thing. No, they'll give him snaps.
Oh, so the thing is like I
don't think anybody wants to be redshirted as a sophomore. Like yeah, football players don't. Think
yeah,
that
but
way.
But now it's like so much more plausible because like if Notre Dame is tight, you're probably not going to get in the Notre Dame game. You know, and if Michigan only has like four games,
but that's been the case for like fourth or fifth running backs for time immemorial. Like.
I know, but what I'm saying, what I'm saying is like if you only have four games of garbage time snaps. Then,
yeah, if he's played four games going into the Ohio State,
people are
going
to get like a natural red shirt on him. And like, it's not like you go in and plan a red shirt.
Yeah, that's fair, especially if you're trying to get guys there freshman four.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, there's only a limited number of snaps to go around where you can actually
do you give those to Samuels or Hassan Haskins?
Do you lose a year of eligibility for him, or do you play Kurt Taylor a couple of plays? That's really comes down to.
Right, yeah. So I it'll be interesting. Kurt Taylor is a guy who nobody has talked about, which is probably par for the course. But
Kurt Taylor takes it to heart, and he's going to prove us wrong.
Well, I mean, the only thing is, like, if True Wilson is the designated blocking guy, that was going to be Kurt Taylor.
That's true. That is not a great sign.
So a little bit.
He's a redshirt freshman. You don't have to.
I'm just putting the information out there that people can do what they want with. At fullback, it will be Ben Mason. Old murder face.
Did you just capitalize that when you said his name?
Obviously.
Yeah.
So I think everybody expects him to be a very fun, mauler.
Angry mustachioed gentleman.
I kind of feel like nobody else on the roster is going to get much playing time.
I think Ben Van Sumeren might, although the tight ends probably, yeah. The glut of weapons is really, it's wonderful.
Van Sumeren's more of a receiver kind of style guy, too.
Yeah, like, that's why I think he has a chance. He's a very different player.
Yeah.
He would be the guy that you would like want on like third and goal.
You hit him on a wheel route.
Zone.
Or you run play action and you hit him on a wheel route because the other team hasn't scouted the second fullback.
that is...
I'm sorry. I didn't say anything.
But I feel like, so last year they had a platoon of fullbacks and they saw about like half the snaps the game half the snaps collectively per game, maybe two thirds. I just kind of feel like that's going to go down because you're going to be in the gun more often. Yeah. People are really talking about Grant Perry. I think the fullback is going to take a step back this year in terms of playing time. But what playing time you do get should be pretty fun because it'll be Ben Mason clobbering people.
And for people asking for Harbaugh to evolve, that is Harbaugh evolving. So.
Well, he's always tried to fit the talent of his offense. So yeah. I don't think that's...
There's also probably going to be a whole bunch of, like, who is that guy? Look up in your program, you know, single play fullbacks that they're going to throw out there.
There'll be multiple.
That run a third down trap against Rutgers.
Right.
Yeah, we'll see a lot of the fun stuff just in total beatdowns, but...
Peter Bush touchdown against Rutgers. I'm calling it now.
Peter Bush. So that's it for running back. We'll tackle wide receiver after this break.
Don't say that word.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley. So did Larry Page. And so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfume for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. Got another story for you from my wonderful Tales of Homeownership. There was like a musty smell coming from my crawl space, and when we opened up, there were like a bunch of bugs in there. Anyway, I called EcoIntelligent Homes, and it's a good thing I did, because as soon as the spring came, that could have gotten a lot worse. I really recommend these guys. They will find the source of the issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they offer financing. EcoIntelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call them at 248-291-7815 or visit their website at ecointelligenthomes.com.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
All right, wide receiver. Michigan is basically down to Grant Perry and the four guys they got 2 years ago. Everybody else is gone.
The good news is that group of four,
pretty good.
Well, actually, despite the lack of production last year, there were circumstances. So, and also, they were freshman receivers, and true freshmen suck.
That's very true. And then the one guy who looked like he might defy true freshmen suck goes out in the Air Force game. So through three games, I think he had like something like 7 or 11 catches. He had a significant number of catches that like project out to a solid season for a sophomore.
Yeah, 11 catches, 149 yards, and a touchdown on an 8.8 a target.
Yeah.
Which in that offense, I don't care who they were playing against, nobody else came close to posting that who played wide receiver.
Right. And, you know, one of those games was against Florida, so that's a good defense, and, like, the other two weren't against good defenses. But you can only work with what you have, so that's going to be about, what, extrapolate that over a year and pretend that he gets competent quarterbacking for the rest of that year. And that's, like, 50 catches, So Michigan might have had their breakout freshman wide receiver, except he got hurt.
Yeah.
And then Donovan Peoples-Jones steps into that role and became the poor damn Donovan Peoples-Jones.
Yeah, Michigan might have had another breakout freshman wide receiver, except he got overthrown every time he was open wide downfield, which is a big part of his allure.
And got a touchdown taken away.
Yeah, so there's one touchdown
call
back.
Oh, man.
just
the universe was not nice to Donovan Peoples-Jones last year.
He's a five-star, and he's that explosive NFL number one wide receiver in the making who will be open. He will be open beyond safeties. He will be open beyond cornerbacks. And the combination of Donovan Peoples-Jones and Shea Patterson, who's very good at the deep ball, that could be something.
I mean, this might sound a little harsh, but Michigan is also going to get something out of not playing Kakoa Crawford for an extended period of time.
That does sound harsh.
But it's true.
It is true.
when you leave, it opens the door, man. We're allowed to.
No, I mean, let's be completely blunt.
We were very blunt about him last year, so I feel like the door was open for that because he was not. He did not play well.
They were throwing
Michigan stuck with him, and especially once Tariq Black went out, they didn't have a lot of other options.
They were throwing fades to Eddie McDoom later on in the season. That was an indictment of Crawford that was not us.
Eddie McDoom averaged 3.5 yards per target last year.
Well, I feel like he got Norfleeted where they're just using him in the wrong way, and he should have gone to Oregon.
Yeah, that's fair.
In the slot, Grant Perry, who I've always been a fan of his talent just because he is the route artisan. Like, he's got those double moves. He's got the kind of, like, he's not really, there's no such thing as a real triple move, but he's able to sell two different routes and then get into a break.
Yes.
And I feel like, you know, we've seen some web posts about him that they're really playing up.
He's just always been productive, too.
Right. It's even in high school where it's clear, like,
He made Alex Malzahn the four-star there.
Yeah.
Wherever Malzahn was a four-star.
And Perry also, he was the only guy really coming back. Like, you know, a play broke down, Perry was usually the guy who was kind of coming open or working his way back or has that instinct to kind of find a spot to get open.
And he was actually on his way to a potential breakout season as well. And then after the Michigan State game, he had 7 catches on the year. Like, he had 18 catches through 5 games, and then he was just gone.
There was a weird lack of playing time. And also, I mean, before and after that, I think throw it to Perry was a theme in UFRs last year.
Well, I was frustrated even when Spate was out there because, like, Perry was obviously his best and most veteran wide receiver.
And the dude who got open.
And he would be open, and Spate would seemingly stare straight at it and then just not throw it to him. So he would be consistently open. And I think, you know, again, with competent quarterbacking, with Shea Patterson able to survey the field and find guys, the main thing that should be a cap on his production is snaps and targets. And I mean,
we're hearing about the potential, like, major emergence of Nico Collins. And if he really breaks out and Tariq Black is as good as he was looking to be, and Donovan Peoples-Jones is as good as he was looking to be.
And Oliver Martin.
Peoples-Jones is a guy who can very much play the slot. And that might. And then you still got to get Zach Gentry and Sean McCune snaps in there somehow. And maybe Nick Eubanks, too.
Well, and the other thing about a guy like Peoples-Jones playing the slot is that gives you that kind of Baylor versus Michigan State look where you
lift the top.
Yeah, where you're really threatening those safeties who are coming down. You know, last year's Michigan State game was a reversion to kind of the old bad days when, you know, those guys got to line up at 8 yards and with impunity.
Fire off.
And so if you put Peoples-Jones in the slot against defenses like that, you might have more upside than for Perry. But I feel Perry is like a lock to be very efficient. How many catches he actually gets is going to depend more on the guys around him who have more upside than him. But I don't think, like, defaulting to, like, let's throw it to Perry is going to be a bad option.
No, he's going to be a guy who, like, at worst fills, like, the Dillio role of, like, this guy should be thrown to more, and he's going to make some big third down conversions.
But he's got, like, 3 or 4 inches on those kind of tiny slot receivers.
So yes, I would hope Dillio plus is probably his floor.
So you mentioned Nico Collins, who is Devin Funchess part two if he works out. Just a super jumbo wide receiver who has the athleticism to get downfield and a huge catching radius.
And has not just screwed around with pretending to be a tight end, so hasn't wasted any time developing at receiver.
We've got that going for us, and there's been talk about him breaking out, and another very slim burned red shirt. There's not much chance they're going to get this one back, but that
might be a sign that they were starting to see this talent last year in practice and knew that a fifth year out of him was probably not in the cards.
Well, we'll see. Oliver Martin, redshirt freshman, guy who I thought was actually going to be the most likely to play of the wide receivers not named Donovan Peoples-Jones when he committed, because he was so supposed to be super, super polished, can play inside and out.
And he blew up when there was no reason to other than being really good.
Right, yeah. And he went to an opening camp as a total nobody, and some guys are like...
From frickin' Iowa.
Yeah, and some guys are like, this guy can actually play. So they send him to the opening.
And he tests great. This dude, tests he better than almost up. Anybody.
You know, Michigan is maybe going to take him, maybe not going to take him. And Notre Dame is about to get him, and I'm like, no, please, God, no. And
the announcers are going to say things about him that will make you raise an eyebrow.
Yeah.
Speaking because we know better.
Possibly not this year, but maybe down the road a little bit. Speaking of, the next two guys are both walk-ons, which kind of speaks to the depth chart and how it has been, we'll call it, hoaxed. Although Harbaugh was the one who collected the first three guys who burned out.
It was gap-eared.
Yeah. But,
if you count him here, Mitchell.
Nate Shanley. Oh, yeah. That's another blast from the past. Nate Shanley
already
got a fair amount of playing time last year. He actually had some catches in the Purdue game.
Yeah.
Then kind of fell off. But he's another, jumbo slot who might be blocked for the reason that we talked previously. But if he sees the field, I'm not, too stressed about it.
He's not a walk-on in, the terms of, he doesn't have the athleticism. He was just a guy who blew up really late in his career.
And also, anybody who sees the field this year, I trust, has earned their way there.
Sure. And also, slot receiver is a place where you can have some walk-ons.
It's true. Alabama had a walk-on.
Alabama had a walk-on. I mean, you can find some guys at slot receiver who are walk-ons. And then Jake McCurry is a guy who's kind of one of those weird names you throw out. But
that was Nate Shanley
last year.
Yeah.
So one of those guys might come through if there's an injury, but they're probably going to be kind of fringy this year.
I think backup receiver has a lot of tight end to it as well, just like with fullback, that you can split those guys out of the slot. And
that is true. Why don't we talk about the tight ends?
What a segue.
At tight end, Michigan returns Sean McCune and Zach Gentry. I think everybody in the world is expecting Zach Gentry to blow up.
Yes. When you look at the page, he already kind of did last year.
Yes, that's the other thing.
He averaged 11.7 yards per target in that offense as a dude who came on late in the year.
Yeah.
And we saw there were a lot of opportunities he could have gotten more. He was just wide open and he didn't get the ball.
And we know some of his missed targets were not his fault, and the dude averaged nearly 18 yards a catch.
So, this is a guy who was not a good blocker last year. I think Pro Football Focus had him in the 200s of about just under 300 qualifying tight ends. So he was, not top half.
But he was in the blocking butt zone.
He was. He was generally in the way. And now that he's added more weight, refined a little bit, you kind of just need him to be that little bit more of a threat so that, people get worried about Michigan's running game, the safeties come up, and then bang, over the top.
If he's Gesicki, he's a threat enough, and he's already a better blocker than Gesicki ever was.
Yeah, and the thing with him getting better as a
blocker.
There are
people in this room who are better blockers. Mike Gesicki.
There are inanimate objects in this room. Anyway.
We'd like to introduce Alex Drain, our new young podcaster.
They made him sound like an inanimate object instead of a person.
Well, that's what we do around here.
But with Gentry, the other thing is when you develop him as a blocker, not only do you potentially get him over the top of safeties, you potentially get him matched up on linebackers because teams just can't align.
Yeah. And I'd like to see that.
They can't align every time to focus on Zach Gentry against this offense. There are too many dudes out there.
And you can motion those guys around and get matchups.
And if anybody knows how to do that, it's Jim Harbaugh, too. That man knows the effectiveness of a shift.
We saw it in the Illinois game when they got Ty Wheatley an easy touchdown.
Yes, because that safety who was way too late to get over was not in any position to tackle him without dying.
And imagine that with a 6'8", 260-pound guy who's NFL fast.
I like that.
I mean, the other thing is tight ends can go downfield on passing plays, and if they're going to be using more RPOs, like they said, just imagine one of these guys coming at you 8 yards downfield. Is he going to block me? Is he going to run past me? Like, what do I do?
You die. And then Sean McCune is, I think, underrated.
Yeah, he felt like Michigan's most reliable receiver last year, especially once Perry disappeared, because you knew you could hit him on a drag and he could potentially turn the corner on somebody.
Well, and everybody's talking about Zach Gentry's athleticism, which is real and spectacular, but we have to remember that McCune was actually the top tight end in spark testing his year.
Yes.
Nationally. And he's this three-star in Connecticut. So if he could block and if he could...
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts, I'm sorry. If he could block and if he could make that... you know, adapt to college play, then he's a really, really good tight end. And Pro Football Focus had him top 30 in tight ends and blocking as a redshirt freshman.
I mean, he certainly didn't pop out as bad.
No.
And usually with tight ends, when you're below average, you pop on some plays because you get matched up against a defensive end and then you get worked.
Well, it's been difficult to tell because Michigan tried to run so much inside zone that they were terrible at last year. So you got a lot of like... someone running downfield to block someone else, and then the tight end
or outside zone that they straight up just didn't know how to block.
And then the tight end's like, hey, a little help here with this defensive end lined up inside of me.
This play is designed to fail. How did we do this?
Yeah. So I think if Michigan can get a little bit more coherent, that McCune, he's not going to be the guy who has 60 catches just because we talked about all the other weapons Michigan has. But again, efficiency. Like, he will be a really good blocker, and when you throw it to him, he will catch it, and he has the athleticism to get, 4, 5, 6 yards after the catch.
Yeah, and the coaches have believed in this guy for a long time. He was number one on the depth chart all last year, even when Zentry, I'm just going to use the... let's just go with it. Yeah, when he was popping out, and Ian Bunting was a pretty decent tight end who just got kind of shoved out by both these guys, and... that was his freshman season. That was his second year in the team.
Yeah,
so
his redshirt freshman year.
Yeah.
And we got to mention that Nick Eubanks is being mentioned in the same breath as both those guys by the coach.
Yes, and of course Eubanks in the opener against Florida outran two safeties from Florida safeties. And I was like, who's that receiver wearing 84?
And then it was
Nick Eubanks. And then he just...
At 240 pounds.
Yeah, so he's got to, bulk up a little bit more.
He's like our second Funchess counterfactual. Like, what if Funchess actually did like blocking and bulked up and was a tight end?
Honestly, I think I compared him to Funchess. But he was also an outrageous athlete who Michigan picked up on late. And then he got
hurt. He got a bad concussion.
Oh, that's right. He got...
He gets a big play, and then early in the season... He disappears because of injuries. Something that, unless he gets concussed again, we're not worried about affecting his development. Yeah,
it's not that hard to see the ultimate yo-yo here, where Michigan can go from a three tight end set featuring McCune, Gentry, and Eubanks, and then on the next play put Chris Evans, Perry, and two wide receivers on the field.
We're going to see some goal line in places where you don't normally see goal line.
I mean... It's just difficult to like have all that in one offense because you got to practice it and rep it and all that stuff. But
and they are trying to simplify things for the linemen too.
Well,
that doesn't really matter in terms of formation, but you don't want to add a bunch of scheme stuff or technique stuff at them, then also throw a huge new playbook at them.
But the personnel is here to have that kind of Andrew Luck offense where they'd go beef it at Stanford, and then they'd run a zone read.
Modern pro style.
Yeah, where everything under the sun is possible from a 23 package to a full-out spread.
And where you have no idea how to match up with your... I mean, they throw all three tight ends out there at the same time, and then they go into a spread look. Like, those guys can do it.
Yeah, actually...
Do you leave your corners on the field, or do you just...
right, like,
what do you
do?
Well,
corners never come off the field.
Yeah, but what if Michigan lines up in goal line?
Or just
who can actually like block goal line.
I mean, that's
train.
It's out there. I don't expect Mustafa Muhammad or Luke Schoonmaker.
The coaches say they're both. They're obviously going to get their four games, but I think the coaches think, especially now with Wheatley gone, that Mustafa's going to play all year.
We clearly need to give Luke a prospect and name, so we don't have to say his last name. We'll come up with it later.
Yeah. So it's we might see him, but I don't think we're going to see him in like meaningful time.
Yeah,
I think they're prepping for a potential Gentry early entry. That's good right there.
In early Zentry?
Oh, man. if you don't know that, Zentry is Zach Gentry's Zoolander name. That's what we decided. Oh, no. Is that going to be a thing?
No, we can't. It would too many things.
Too many things?
The prospective name is the one that actually has multiple things.
Yeah, well, if...
Although we lost. We did lost the OG in old skillet hands.
Yes, we did. R.I.P. All right.
Ian Bunting still lives, man.
That sounds like an
album. Are we delaying
title.
Before talking about the offensive line?
Perhaps,
maybe.
Perhaps. So we're going to take a break because it's coming. It's next. It's the offensive line.
No.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, and MLS number 1161358.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across Southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
There's an old friend that I once heard say something that touched my heart, and it began this way. I was born by the river in a little tent, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. He said it's been a change is gonna come. Oh yeah.
All right, so we've been fairly very very positive about
don't do it
the entire rest of the offense.
Stop it.
But now we have to talk about
this
bit. So Rashawn Gary,
Ben Bradison. All right.
Let's start there, at least. He might be good.
Actually, I want to start with Cesar Ruiz.
Okay, actually, I'm okay with that, considering last year's UFRs.
So, the OL post in the season preview is going to tackle this in detail.
Don't say that word.
OL?
Tackle.
Tackle. Oh. All right, we're going to have to man up here. I think.
Can we I'm not man ready. Up? Can we at least start with the interior?
We're going to, but like, I want you to be in the process of manning up.
I'm working on it.
All right.
I'm working on it.
I do this to my child. I ask him to use his big boy voice. And it's like, hey, buddy, can you use your big boy voice? And he says, big boy voice.
This is what Michigan fans are going to have to do to themselves when talking about the tackles until we see some things.
All right, but let's talk. So Cesar Ruiz was, by some acclamation in the recruiting industry, the best center prospect in the last 10 years.
Ever, basically.
Yeah. And
maybe not ever. But
he got to play center at IMG. He displaced Mike Onwenu in the starting lineup halfway through last year. First because Onwenu was hurt, but then it was clear that Onwenu was healthy and they just preferred Ruiz. And he has been locked in as the starting center essentially since he showed up. And given the gap between what we saw in Michigan's organization, especially in pass protection, as under Mason Cole as a center, and then with Patrick Kugler as a center, I think that this could be like a hidden source of major improvement. Because I can't tell you that I thought Patrick Kugler couldn't hack it, and it was just not mentally dexterous enough to be a center. I'm not trying to dump on his intelligence,
but Michigan ditched his coach.
I can't spell the word renaissance without looking it up or getting a red squiggly. So maybe Patrick Kugler just has that with playing center. Who knows? But I just feel like, you have one OL coach. He's Ed Warner. He's a proven guy. You have a guy who has the mental dexterity to be a center and has been playing there for the bulk of his career.
And also, the physical package is very much there with him. He is already an NFL center in terms of his size.
He's 330. He's reasonably compact for that size. I think Ruiz is going to immediately be one of the best centers in the Big Ten, and I cannot overstate how much that changes this offense.
Yeah, no, it's huge to have somebody. We saw so many missed stunt pickups last year. I will see them in my sleep until the season starts.
I mean, I was UFRing plays, and I was like, I have no idea what they're trying to accomplish here.
Yeah.
Like, this can't be a play where everybody has the same
thing. I was half expecting you to pull out, like, the original UFR pile of bodies, wad of bodies terminology to describe of Michigan's schemes last year, because how do you decipher that? Not schemes, but there were clearly times where half the line was running one play and the other half was running another.
Well, Caron Higdon's touchdown against Indiana overtime, he had to make a guy dodge in the backfield because Kugler went the wrong way. Yes. Everybody else in the line went one way and he went the other way. And I'm just like,
and blocked nobody.
and that was like,
and you're the center. Like, you're the dude who's supposed to know out of anybody.
Right. And like, it wasn't like, and that was like not even close to one of the most confusing plays. Like, it was
probably not even from that game.
No. And so I kind of feel like that might be like the hidden revelation of the season.
And the other thing is that the run game was pretty darn good last year in spite of everything.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at Football Study Hall, their S&P Plus, Michigan was a
14th
top 15 rush offense, despite the fact that they had no passing game. And that's competition adjusted as well.
And 20th in adjusted line yards and 7th in power success rate. Those are O-line metrics.
Right. So
And most of that was later in the season, too. They didn't start the season plowing Purdue over.
They changed like what they were running partway through the season.
They became a power team like late in the year.
Right. So they've got Mike Onwenu and Ruiz and like Juwan Bushel-Beatty, and they decide that they're going to be an inside zone team at the beginning of the year.
And because what you want to see is Juwan Bushel-Beatty like daintily take a step in concert with everybody else and try to just sort of gently push somebody instead of come screaming around the edge and just maul.
So I don't know if that was a Drevno decision or a Frey decision. It doesn't matter because both of them are gone. That will not be the case this year. They are gonna be a power rushing team. But let's move on to the two guards, Ben Bredesen and Mike Onwenu, both true juniors. And in that, especially because Ruiz is a true sophomore, I think you see sort of the overarching narrative of why Michigan's offensive line can never get ahead of the curve.
Yes.
So they are...
No redshirts.
They had no business being on the field as freshmen. They were on the field anyway. How much different does this season look if Michigan can put a redshirt on Mason Cole instead of him having be a very, very average left tackle as a true freshman?
Yeah, I think it also says something about like what our expectations are with these guys, because I think we have higher expectations for them if we just didn't see them until last year.
I mean, I think it's just you get to skip all the crappy bits.
Yeah, you can't delete what you've seen.
Right.
You can't. It's hard to not have that taint how you perceive somebody, even if you're trying to be rational about it. I've seen Predison blow a lot of blocks.
For 2 years, which would, like, this year should be his redshirt sophomore season, which is when offensive linemen usually get their first
right. Yeah, we should never have seen the year where he just wouldn't pull all the way through on a power play. We shouldn't have seen him on the field that year.
That happened last year, too.
That did happen a couple times last year. It didn't happen as much.
So, yeah, you're right. Like, he should be a redshirt sophomore who is just becoming a starter. And because he's not, you know, you get this kind of thing where, well, he kind of stank last year. But he was supposed to stink because he was a second-year player.
And second-year lineman, you know.
And he was in this chaos factory.
So, yeah, like, yeah, before you even had the context, there's reason to believe that.
So, Michigan, he's locked in as well. So I also feel like he's been better than he's been able to show. So I think you're
going to... And they're talking about him as the leader of that line instead of Ruiz. And you know, part of that probably is the function of junior versus sophomore.
Yeah.
But you also have to earn that by being good.
And then Onwenu is actually getting pushed by Steven Spinellis. And I kind of... My hottest take for the offense is I think Spinellis is going to win the job. And maybe not immediately, but at some point during the year, because it's just going to be like a conditioning thing and a mobility thing. And Spinellis is super smart, and he's also very hefty. Like, he cut down from like 330, and he's down to 300 now. So he's like, I think his body is ready. I think he's got the mental dexterity to do it.
He's not like a big runaway grape train, though.
No,
like,
he's not. Like, he doesn't have the highest upside of any guard in the history of football.
And that, I mean, if Onwenu gets his conditioning in order...
I said it was a hot take.
He has to be out there.
I said it was a hot take. It's a hot take.
Especially since, like, I mean, they did pull him for Ruiz, but we were concerned about that, and then we learned that that's because Ruiz was good and was just in better condition.
It's a hot take. It's my hot take. It's a hot.
I don't disagree with you. Like, I wouldn't be upset to see Spinellis in the starting lineup, because I think, first of all, that means he pushed through Onwenu, and he
figuratively.
Fair.
More kind of like fell into the black hole and spit out.
Gotten around Onwenu by virtue of either gravity or
also figuratively.
Yeah. However. And he just looked good in the snaps that we saw him at as an extra tight end.
He did. He got like only a handful of those, and I was often giving him like a plus one on those. And so I think that I'm very comfortable seeing him on the field if there's an injury or if he pushes through into the starting lineup. So I feel fairly good about the interior offensive line. And now, Ace, I need to know if you have manned up.
I'm here for it.
Okay.
I'm here.
So,
Mike Dwumfor.
Tackle is the most terrifying thing on the team. It was the most terrifying thing last year.
Yes, it was. And that was in spite of the quarterback situation.
And in spite of Mason Cole being one of the tackles.
Yeah.
Mason Cole is gone. And they got through spring, and the projected starting left tackle was Juwan Bushel-Beatty, who cannot pass block. Just full stop. And the projected right tackle was John Runyon, who
is 3-star Mason Cole.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guard, right? Like, he's 6'4"-ish. He doesn't have the
That was Mason Cole.
They added
Mason Cole is an NFL center who was masquerading as a left tackle last year.
I was merely clarifying for the
Runyon is a good inch at least shorter than Mason Cole.
Yeah.
And
so this just feels beyond terrible. It feels a little bit less terrible now because Bushel-Beatty has moved to right tackle, which means that I think that they know that if they put him on the field, that he can't be the blindside pass protector. And I think people are kind of expecting James Hudson to get the nod.
depending on where you look, that might have already happened, or at least is starting to happen.
Right. So, like, and like, that's the number one thing I wanted from this offseason.
James Hudson is starting
at tackle. And he's a guy who they moved, despite the fact that he was a really good defensive tackle prospect. They redshirted him last year for pretty obvious reasons. He did play tackle in high school. And everything about him from the program has been very positive ever since. Now, he's a redshirt freshman, so there's going to be hiccups. There's always hiccups. But he has the physical ability to pass block, and he will hopefully be in a pretty simple protection system and just get by. I just want him to get by. That's all I want. I just want him to get by.
I mean, if Bushel Beatty was their best tackle at the end of spring, and they were playing him up, they were trying to make us feel more comfortable with Bushel Beatty at
that
point.
That's like a Johnny Sears at that point.
They come into fall, and Hudson almost immediately is like in a dead heat with him, and then beats him out for game one.
You think that was like off-season motivation?
I think. But I think that, you know, he's a redshirt freshman. He's already pushing through. That's a good sign for him.
Yeah, and then at left tackle is now John Rudden.
Yes. For now.
Who?
Well, I don't... the competitors don't inspire much confidence either in terms of their circumstances.
For now,
unless Andrew Stuber being hurt just means that nobody's talked about him because they haven't seen anything to talk about.
Yeah, that's pretty much my take. So.
Yeah.
Like, Ryan Hayes is not going to be ready. The other person they're talking about is Jalen Mayfield, who's a true freshman.
Yeah.
He is a 6'6", 290-pound true freshman.
He at least is tackle size and shape.
And, you know, I have great respect for Greg Fry's ability to recruit.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he proved it with Mayfield, who was a 250-pound guy when they got him, and now he's 40 pounds heavier. And it looks like of all the tackles on the roster, I have the highest expectations for Mayfield long term.
Interesting.
Because like, he can be like a prototype left tackle, and you know, Hudson might top out as a prototype right tackle. But if anyone pushes through, it's probably going to be Mayfield, and that's a true freshman tackle. And we were just talking about how you can't get red shirts on these guys because Michigan never has any depth. So I'm really hoping that Runyon is functional, serviceable.
Or that Stuber is a wild lottery ticket.
I mean, that's unlikely.
I mean, you get Notre Dame at the beginning, and then the schedule kind of eases off until the back end, which is murder. There's a possibility that Mayfield is, you know, a guy that comes along later in the season. Grant Newsom was not playing until halfway
still
through the season.
But he was a redshirt freshman.
And Grant Newsom was a dude who
Newsom was a true freshman.
Was he?
Yeah, but he was a dude.
Well, that just speaks to the same thing I'm always talking about.
He was a guy who was headed for, like, top half of the first round status.
Well, Mayfield, I think, could be that guy.
Maybe could be that guy, but have it happen this quickly, that dude has to grow into, like, the 40 pounds that he just added.
I mean, don't underestimate how excellent Gary Fry as a recruiter.
And also, I mean, Ed Warner is a heck of an offensive line coach.
So backups, other than Mayfield and hopefully Bushel Beatty, no offense.
Chuck Filiaga. That's a spoonerism I can't say on this podcast.
I think Filiaga is going to need another year solely because of his weight. So he was listed at 345, and now he's 341.
He had to, either he reshaped or he needs to reshape.
So there were a couple of recruiting guys who were talking about how he had next to no bad weight, even though he was freaking enormous. So maybe he's just another Onwenu who's just made out of weird stuff.
But I don't know. That it seems like the more likely explanation is just that he needed to reshape.
I think he's more of a counterfactual Alex Mitchell in a actual weight trimming program instead of just throw Alex Mitchell out there. Like, he was recruited as a tackle who's already tackle sized.
Did we have to put Alex Mitchell into this?
Yeah, let's not compare anyone.
I'm sorry. He's a guy who came in. They were desperate for tackles who could play right away, and he was a guy that they grabbed.
Well, no. I mean, even as a recruit, people were talking about how he was probably a guard long-term because he went to the Army game, and he couldn't hack it on the edge. He's a great guard prospect.
I think the good scouts were talking about it that way. I think that a lot of some scouts were talking about him as a tackle right away, and that bumping inside was always in his cards.
Yeah. Phil Paya moved over from defense and is probably a long-term project there. Joel Honigford.
He needs an old name.
He does. He's a guy who I think people are not talking about. I had reasonably high hopes for him. He was actually the sleeper of the year in that class. And he's still on campus as an offensive lineman, so hurdle number one has been cleared. But I think that, you know, he's probably another developmental prospect. And then Nolan Elizio is still on the roster, but nobody's talking about him.
Yeah.
I think that's the first time his name has been mentioned all offseason by anyone covering Michigan.
No, because there's a lot of articles where they're listing literally everyone on the roster who's at a particular position.
He did get starts last year. Like, he's on, like, the Phil Steele page, if you have
to.
Like.
So it's, but, you know, like, given how those starts
his
went.
His name's on the list.
So for Hail to Victories, I went and tried and made up a stat of, like, a percentage of plays where an offensive lineman made his block versus he missed them.
You made up a stat?
Well, I created a
grading.
You created a stat.
Created a stat.
Okay, because made up a stat sounds bad.
Okay. Anyway,
well, it does.
I pulled out of the ether a stat that was
no,
just
no. That's I painstakingly constructed a database from which I learned this fact.
Boom.
I watched the Ohio State game and the South Carolina game because you hadn't UFR'd them to get this stat. So.
It's painful, Seth.
Anyway, he graded out way worse than even Bushel Beatty at pass blocking. It was like
he's not. We don't need to talk about him. He's not going to play.
If
we're talking
about the
backups,
it boggles mind that he even played last year.
Let's not.
Well,
it happened.
I mean, the way that happened was so bizarre because it's just like, oh, and this guy is coming on like a week before camp and nobody.
Yeah, he wasn't being mentioned. Yeah.
And then he was suddenly the starting tackle, and I was like, this is bad.
Yeah, if Honickford is your starting tackle against Notre Dame, that would be
a similar occurrence. All right, we've talked about the offensive line. You have manned up
too
successfully.
Much. Yeah.
It is the outstanding issue on this offense, except for integrating Shea Patterson. Like, I think integrating Shea Patterson is a thing.
And those things are kind of tied together a little bit.
I do think Shea Patterson's strengths makes the offensive line's weaknesses a little bit more tolerable. He's very escapable. He's a guy who's comfortable operating in a quick strike thing from a shotgun. So,
how multiple this offense should be able to be, with how many weapons they have out there, how much attention is just going to be paid to the other players on the field where... Can you load up and send guys like teams did last year?
But there's, like, no chance that this offensive line is legitimately good.
No.
It can be legitimately average.
They can be legitimately good at run blocking.
Yes.
But if they hit 60th in pass blocking this year, I'll be over the moon.
Yeah. I mean, functionally, like, in a pro football focus sense, like, in a stat sense, you might be able to play away from it enough that it's okay. And that's what you're hoping is that, like, one of the things that really leapt out at me watching Shea Patterson with Ole Miss is how much they relied on him. So first down is going to be a throw, you know, third and short is probably going to be a throw, and they would have throw, and then they'd give it to the running back for like three straight snaps, and he'd get a first down immediately because nobody was like, "Oh, you can do that? I didn't. you can run the ball."
Yeah,
and that's not going to be the case. At Michigan. Like, I mean, Michigan's going to be a run-first team.
Wait, an added point of concern with the offensive line as it is, and a thing we very much saw last year, is that your quarterback injury risk skyrockets when you cannot pick anything up.
Don't even, no, no, no. I don't even want to think about that. Oh, God, that's, ugh.
So...
Peters.
I mean, like, it's important that Brandon Peters is still on this roster.
Yes.
That he's stuck is a big thing.
If we get down to Joe Milton this year, nobody's going to be happy. I don't. Why are we?
Ennui will be
the comment that keeps on getting in my head, and I've been trying to force it down. Is can we get to Ohio State with a Hail quarterback just once?
Yeah, please. So in my adult life,
I think the last time it happened was 2011 with Denard.
Yep.
Okay, I was adultish then.
Yeah, but like maybe if it happened again, it would be nice.
Yeah, that would. It really
but
would.
Like so, like, I look at this, we talked about this, and this is a very optimistic take on most of the positions. I mean, they got a great tight end room. They have a couple of really good running backs. Wide receiver still somewhat unproven, but they have...
But the talent's off the charts.
Yeah, they got a lot of talent that they can hope to hit on.
I kind of wanted your take on the RPOs, on run-pass options, and how much that's going to affect. Because Penn State really used those last couple of years to kind of make up for the fact that they had a bad offensive line, especially tackle.
That's true.
As well. And I think Ole Miss, when you look at the difference between what Michigan was doing with their offensive line and Ole Miss's comparable offensive line, you know, it was Shea Patterson, but a lot of it was just that scheme.
That is a good point, because when you run an RPO, you're not pass blocking.
Right.
So that would help.
Which Michigan should avoid as much as possible.
No, honestly, yeah. Like I'd overlooked that. That's a really great point to bring up. So Patterson's ability to and comfort with RPOs, which Ole Miss did run a ton of, and that's one of the reasons that they managed to get up to dead average in pass protection,
yeah.
Is because a lot of those passes didn't have any pass protection attached. My one concern is that it kind of feels like Michigan is catching on to the RPO at this like late, and that they're going to, yes, be running the basic version of the RPO that defenses have already adjusted to.
Well, other teams are running things that like read the safety.
I don't really agree with that at all, because Harbaugh was running them before anybody in the NFL. He was running those with San Francisco, and he was using the tight end to do the stuff that they were doing in the Super Bowl that were actually RPOs, not what they were all calling RPOs, yeah, with like the tight end screwing with the middle linebacker.
I'd feel better about Harbaugh. That if we'd seen any of that in the last few years, because you could still run RPOs with not an easy install.
If any option kind of play is not going to be like a fast install. That's going to
plays simplify things.
Because you can. You got to make the read.
You can beat up multiple scenes.
Yeah, but they require reps.
They do require.
Yeah, you have to make the read right 90% of the time.
So they kind
of make it functional.
They kind of inherited a guy who had already had a ton of RPO reps.
Yeah, this is also unfortunately. You know, we've talked about the problems with the turnover and not being able to fill in on the offensive line. The same thing is true at quarterback.
Yeah. And like, was Wilton Spate really going to be the RPO quarterback?
No.
And the time to install that would have been when they thought Wilton Spate was the quarterback.
That's true.
Like, yeah, if you're going to that season with John O'Korn, you probably have a very different game plan.
That you light on fire.
Let's not.
Fans were like, actually have been very awful to John O'Korn.
Let's let it go.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do feel more optimistic about this offense than I feel like I should. And it really just all comes down to, like, can they find, like, two crappy-ish tackles? Like, they don't have to be good. They can be crappy-ish.
And I think also, like, does the play calling make sense? Because we don't know. I mean, there's a new – shuffled the offensive staff. They're changing the offense.
Well, they can't board just it halfway through the season and be like, we're an inside zone team. Oh, wait. No, we're going to be a power team. Don't do that. Just be your power team.
That's probably not going to happen because there aren't two offensive line coaches on the staff anymore.
And they just made that mistake, and they're not going to make it again. So don't board just sit. Get a couple of offensive tackles. Patterson's like able to transition to
Don't Harbaugh's. Listen to any suggestions from Jim McElwain.
Let's just hope that he does have a lot of experience as a wide receiver.
Let's hope he's very good at, you know, blocking technique.
Well, no, like he's like, and I think that the wide receiver coaching last year was a major issue.
Oh yeah,
he does have a lot of experience in that department. So like maybe could be okay. We'll see. But you know, I'll be happy with an offense that can put up 20 points against Notre Dame. That's all 20. That's all I'm asking for. Because
that should be enough to win that.
It should
game.
Be enough for it.
I really feel more confident about the offense against Notre Dame than I do with the offense through the rest of the season.
Because
Notre Dame never makes any freaking sense.
Well, and also Notre Dame's like they're trying to play with hybrid space players at linebacker. They're doing the things that you do to like play against modern offenses, and Rutgers learned, you know, doesn't work well against Wainu.
I just don't think it would be that telling because the first game of the season is often stupid.
That's true as well. Utah, Jake Rudock.
Ohio State against Virginia Tech.
That was like the second game.
It was a very like weird early season, just like, what the heck was this?
It was Bud Foster, like,
or any Michigan win over Notre Dame when Rich Rodriguez was around.
For 2008.
All right.
We'll be right back.
thank you for listening to the offense portion of the season preview podcast instead of thinking about tackles. Ayo!
I put it in, I put it into the podcast, yo, and then didn't think about it.
I-O.
I always read it as podcast, yo.
It's input-output.
It's a Harry Potter freaking trick.
All right, I have to do something now. So you could
podcast, yo.
If we could be quiet while I do the thing I have to do so we can proceed with our jobs, that would be great.
Fair enough.
Okay.